So we have, looks like, two more days to discuss the Harinam Chintamani. They will look at offenses in devotional service. But first, maintaining material attachments. This is a 10 offense to maintain material attachments even after receiving so many instructions on the matter. This is a very difficult offense because we wonder why we're chanting so much and at the same time still having certain attachments. It can cause one to feel that maybe the chanting isn't so powerful. Maybe it really doesn't work so well. Because why after 10, 15, 20, 30 years or so, someone is still having certain attachments? Sometimes they may seem to disappear for a while, and then they resurface. So it's interesting that this is the last offense, of course, which we say every day. You see all the other offenses. We think about them, hopefully, before we chant. And we try to apply them to our lives to avoid them. So let us see what Haridas Thakur, by the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is giving us on this topic. So we take the second paragraph. The worst offense against the holy name, drenched in tears of ecstatic love, Sri Haridas Thakur went on to explain in a choked voice the last of the offenses of the holy name. My Lord, this last nam aparad is the worst kind of offense. Its presence restricts the free flow of the divine love of prema. Even after taking spiritual initiation, most materially attached persons cannot fully give up bodily designations. They maintain a me and a mind mentality that sidetracks them from the path of devotion. From physical designations, example, I am a Brahmana, I am a Vaishnava, I am a king, or this is my position, wealth, son, grandson, and so on. Symptomized spiritual immaturity are deterrents to proper cultivation of devotional service. This terrible offense is only ameliorated when one surrenders to the holy name. So we can avoid the other 9 offenses and still maintain mature attachments. But how can that be if we avoid any other 9 offenses? Then where's the question of being still maturely attached? The chanting is potent. Then it seems that this should automatically not be an issue because we follow the other offenses. But we are avoiding, of course, those offenses, but constantly there's a mental counterpart. Constantly we have to look at how we are understanding things, what we are aspiring for, and what we are realizing. We can do so many things and not connect with this essence. It'll give us some effects, but not quite the same. We can go on for many, many lifetimes of chanting. If we're chanting with offense, then we won't get the results. But why is it we can go on for many, many lifetimes and not make the offense, avoid the 9 offenses, but still be maturely attached? So as we go on, we'll see some explanation of this, because it deals with the 6 limbs or branches of surrender that we often here given to us by Rupa Goswami, and we also reflect on hoping from time to time. Pali Maharaj Ekavir? Brother, yeah? Is that home? Okay. The necessity of surrender to the Holy Name. Every devotee must cease all aparas and surrender completely to the Holy Name. According to scriptures, the process of surrender has six limbs. It is beyond my ability to describe them in detail. I shall touch upon these six and place them before your lotus feet. So let's listen to what these six things are. The vow to accept everything favorable for the execution of devotional service. We remind ourselves that in our devotional life, we're supposed to accept everything favorable and reject everything that is unfavorable. And that's the second one. Reject anything that is unfavorable. To be convinced that Lord Krishna will always give protection. To depend wholly on Krishna for everything. Always feel meek and humble. To throw oneself at the lotus feet. These are the six limbs of Krishna. So while all the chanting is going on, and all the other activities of the devotional experience, that these things must be given sufficient attention. So let's go over those again. The vow to accept everything favorable. Now that's not always so easy to consider what is favorable and what is not favorable. And so there are many ways we can justify something that really isn't favorable. And we can incorporate it into our lives, or we depend on it. We take shelter of it, and then there's a problem. Does it increase my desire to chant? Does it increase my desire to follow the four rules and regulations? Does it increase my ability to avoid, you know, the various offenses? And if we look at this honestly, then we can be able to use it as a barometer to see. Yes, this is definitely not favorable because it doesn't enhance my desire to associate with devotees. If I stay up late at night, if I watch TV, if I go to disco, if I do this or that, does this increase my desire to chant the Holy Name? Does it increase my desire to hear the philosophy? Does it increase my desire to become like the personalities in the scriptures? And where not, we are to reject it. And in some cases, it's not always the same for each person. There's some things that distinctly is very helpful for one person because it increases their appreciation of the process, and for someone else it doesn't. There's some small details like that sometimes, but we have to look honestly and see, is it really increasing my desire or is it doing something opposite? Where it is, then we do more of that, give more attention to it. And where not, then we have to be honest and to reject it. Otherwise, even though we are trying to avoid the other 10 offenses, the other 9 offenses, we'll still maintain the material attachments. Because there will not be that rejection or accepting what is proper. And we will not be, most important, fully dependent upon Krishna. Remember earlier in chapter, we were talking about criticizing saintly persons, and there was an emphasis about the different qualities of a sadhu. And there was explained about what's called the Swarupa Lakshana, the major or the primary quality that all the other qualities are ornaments or they rest upon. And that quality, well, let me ask you, remember, what was that quality, Swarupa Lakshana? Yes, that was the major quality that constitutes healthy devotion, healthy Krishna consciousness. All the other qualities are there, but they're like ornaments. the Sarupa Lakshana to be fully dependent upon Krishna. So this one, you know, can be faked. So we can do so many things in many ways, expertly or not. But the real question is this consistency going on? Are we really depending more and more on Krishna? As we do that, then it means that, you know, that's our surrender. Because ultimately this is one of the major tenets of our spiritual life. Not holding on to artificial possessiveness. And this is the first paragraph that Haridas is sharing with us. That one can go on and on, and even be, even have taken initiation, and still make this ten offense. Maintaining ritual attachments because of the consideration of I am mine, or this possessiveness. One is thinking that he or she is a controller. Possessiveness, but one is still identifying with the body and the mind in an unhealthy way. Possessiveness, but one is still trying to lord over things that they survey. Possessiveness, and one is still trying to be too much a part of material energy rather than honoring it and using it in Krishna's service. So these six limbs, again, the essence is still fully dependent upon Krishna. Accept everything favorable, that's one. Reject everything that is unfavorable. To be convinced that Lord Krishna will always give protection. To depend wholly on Krishna for everything. Always be meek and humble. Throw oneself at Krishna's lotus feet. You can actually take all these six and still make them the same thing as full dependence on Krishna. Accept everything favorable. That will help us to fully depend on Krishna. Reject everything that will cause us not to depend on Krishna. To be meek and humble so that we are always depending upon Krishna. Trying to understand what he wants to deserve. The idea of convinced of full protection is depending fully on Krishna. So this is really Krishna consciousness, how to depend fully on Krishna, which means how to recognize that everything is always coming from Krishna, always will be, and that he is the ultimate proprietor, well-wisher, object of our affection and love. So the mind, the senses, have to go through so many things to come to this point. And so Haridas is letting us understand that all of these things to be avoided, these offenses, and he gives us an elaborate explanation on them. And then he's concluding here, well, there's another chapter, but he's concluding with the offenses and saying that even though the others may be avoided, that still this may go on. One may have material attachments. And this means that although the others are activated, the essence isn't brought out sufficiently. This Sarupa Lakshana, that there's still a lack of full dependence on Krishna. So that lack of dependence is not addressed, just like in any type of offense. If it's not eventually addressed, then it can cause one to begin to become entangled again, and even to back, you know, to backtrack. One must give up false designations like Brahmana, Sudra, father, husband, king, subject, master, donor, maintainer, relinquish all attachments to money, body, sons, wife. Instead, one should center the attachments and relationships around Krishna, thinking he is the real master. So he's getting category one thing after another. One has to give up the intense identification with all of these. But he doesn't say one has to give up identification or attachment. He says one has to give up attachment to such. Now, but do what? But attach oneself to Krishna. Why? Because he is a real master and Lord. His will is imperative. I'm ready to act only to fulfill Lord Krishna's desires and won't even think of my own wishes. Not that I am not going to have any desires, any wishes, It means that I'm not going to think of my desires, my wishes, about my body and my own sovereignty, but I'm going to have desires, but those are thinking of Krishna. I will adjust my household affairs for the Lord's satisfaction. Not that I have to necessarily not be a householder in order to gain love of God, but I need to adjust them for the Lord's satisfaction. By wish, I will cross the mature ocean. In times of both joy and sorrow, I will remain, happiness or distress, joy and sorrow, I will remain eternally Lord Krishna's servitor. Only by his desire can I become compassionate to the suffering of others. All my moments of material enjoyment and my moods of austerity are experienced solely through the Lord's will. And keep thinking about this as we go into some more difficult and even controversial subject matter a little later, because this is a serious issue, maintaining material attachments even after understanding so many instructions. And it's the major issue that we find the spirituals are confronted with in general, but it can be broken down in various ways. But as we come to the transcendental process, we have all the knowledge. We have so much before us. You know, there's no lacking of information, of knowledge and wisdom in the Vaishnava connection. So many great acharyas have given so much, they've written so much. So much is explained in so many amazing ways. So much is being given clearly concerning the goal. So much association is made available. But then we have to look a little closer. Why do we still maintain mutual attachments? And so here clearly it's bringing out, we're not trying to be void of attachments. We're trying to be void of material attachments. We're not trying to be void of any type of relationship in general, in most cases. We're trying to have the proper relationships that are Krishna-centered. It's much more difficult than to speak about, to reflect on, to really to fully imbibe. And often so much of our success is based on how we're able to have healthy attachments and not to be overly attached to unnecessary things, or not to avoid being attached. We avoid being attached. This again is the activities of denial or repression, and will lead to failure. One unable to accept the six limbs of surrender is a prisoner. A false ego who always thinks in terms of me and mine. So we are always reminded this is a serious issue that stops the Atmanavedana, the ego. But ego is underlying the disease. But what are some of the ways that is manifested? We'll look at that. He proudly declares, I'm the master here. The household and the family belongs to me. The fruits of work are mine by right of labor, and I am the enjoyer. This woman is my wife. He is my brother. He is my son. By sweat of my brow, I earn my own living. Success is the reward of my endeavors. Now, why is this unhealthy? Because perhaps this is the case. Someone does have a wife, a brother, a business. Someone does have certain things that they have achieved that are successful by their endeavors. But unhealthy to just think that one is fully responsible themselves. Symptoms of one who is free from namaparads. Full spiritual benefit is not acquired simply by avoiding the 10 namaparads. These 10 offenses have their distinct features, and being warned to avoid them, one is actually being ordered to positively implement specific sangha qualities that render these apavads impossible. We understand that. The 10 offenses have their distinct feature in being warned to avoid them. But full spiritual benefit is not acquired simply by avoiding the ten namaparams. Full benefit is never acquired by just avoiding anything. But we are avoiding so that we can have that energy to engage in that which is healthy. So it's not just the stopping of the avoidance or recognizing what is improper. Sometimes that happens, and one kind of stops and puts most of the energy into that. But we are clearing the way. All these ten aparas is to clear the way. For now, proper connection, proper absorption, proper activities, etc. Therefore, so just keep this in mind. Full spiritual benefit is not acquired simply by avoiding the ten namaparas. If one continues to chant with offense, then in spite of many endeavors, he will never attain pure devotion. The fruitive worker or karmi enjoys heavenly bliss through karma. The jnani obtains liberation. So, if one goes on with offenses, the nine as well as the ten, one will not be able to attain prema. And then the next chapter deals with all kinds of devotional offenses. Mostly they're in relationship to seva aparad, or to offenses, the connection with the deity. And I'm sure I have looked through these closely, hopefully. You see that they are quite intricate. Lots of detail. Some we give full attention to, some we do not always give so much attention to. But interesting to see how they're all centered so much around the deity. Service of the deity, being in association with the deity, entering the temple. So many things of this nature. Which reminds us again, back to the Sarvabhauma Lakshana, full dependence on Krishna, and being reminded of Krishna through the deity, through the association, through the rituals, through the sadhana, through the process. Now, one area I'd like to spend the rest of the time trying to address that is very complex in some ways. When you think about, you see attachments, maintaining material attachments. When you think about why people have, why most devotees, modern day Vaishnavas, have trouble in their devotional life. As you look at all the ways it manifests, we realize that the most distinct way it manifests is that there is not fully dependence on Krishna. Or as Haridas was saying in the first paragraph, is that there is the possessiveness, there's the identification of I am mine. And that identification deals with how one is seeing his body and mind or in use, or how one is trying to pursue shelter and pleasures and feel valued and esteemed, and etc. So Bhaktivinoda is explaining that Haridas says that one can even avoid the nine other aparads and still make this aparad of being materially attached. And then later he's saying even one can avoid all of these ten namaparads, but this is not really the goal. Is that it's not the things that we are trying to not do, it's the things that we are to do. And then he's given us this list of one thinking, I am successful, I am having a brother, I'm having a wife, I'm having a husband, I'm having a sister, I'm having this, I'm having that, I'm responsible for my success, or I'm lord over what I survey in various ways. So he's saying this is all bad. But we see that people do have such things, and such attachments are very prominent. And then he says one should not see their household situation just as theirs. So We just go back to the theme of proper attachments, proper association, properly accepting everything favorable and rejecting things that are unfavorable. And so we look closer to see what is actually favorable and what is unfavorable. Now we bring it home a little bit more. We think about what causes the greatest difficulty for modern day Vaishnavas. You think about that a minute. What seemingly causes one of the greatest difficulties? When people are not happy in spiritual life, when people bloop. You know, if you get 1,000 devotees together and you talk to them very intimately and you ask them, why did you leave? Then you ask them again, when they're really more, to be more honest, what is really the problem? What do you think the person is honest and one is who is asking is able to see through the lines? What do you think will be one of the major problems that keeps coming up? If you ask nuns and monks and priests, why did you leave the order? I mean, why did you really leave? After they've given all the superficial explanations of why they left, what is something that will be shockingly, constantly coming up? What do you think? Yes. It will all have to do with sexuality. Now let's look at that. A very delicate subject. This is Kartik, so it's the time we can all try to have more realizations and refinements and what goes on in our lives, what goes on in the devotional process, so there can be greater acceleration of excellence. Why do we have most of our renunciates have fallen down? Why do we have most renunciates in the world fall down? Why do we have that now, especially in the West and gradually sweeping the world, that most marriages are also ending in divorce? More marriages now worldwide are ending in divorce. It's like more pregnancies are ending in abortion than natural births. Let's look at America and we look at the world. First, America, its biggest exportation is entertainment. And most of it has to do with sexual stimulated stuff. And so what it exports more than any other item, any other thing all around the world, this is why sometimes fanatics are so much hating America, because they see what's happening with American entertainment, how it's entering every aspect of, you know, of the world culture. And so much of it is MTV and just sensual things. Movies that are... I saw that, you know, when I was in Russia. And I was checking on the news to find out about this crash that was near us. We were at the Black Sea with this plane, when the plane crashed. And it turned on and I was shocked. And there was American movies. And what do you call it? Dubbing in Russian language. It was all American scenes. So, and then the next day I turned on and there was, you know, this MTV, you know, this stuff that you see in America that's very popular, being shown in these countries that didn't even have such a good relationship, you know, with America. Now, every day 50 new pornography websites are made available to the public in America. One of the biggest growth industries, pornography, makes something like 14 $15 billion every year, and that's growing. The average person, their first involvement in pornography is around 10 or 11 years old, and that's also going down. America is exporting things all around the world, affecting much of the world. We're just looking at the present-day situation, because to show the kind of background that we are all smothered with as we're trying to, you know, trying to be devotees. That statistics showed 10 years ago that only about 20%, 25% of householders in America are sexually honest to each other. That means almost like 75-80% people who are married are having some kind of illicit or promiscuous activities outside of marriage. You know, just give you these statistics, give you an idea of the background of how difficult sexuality is. One third out of every girl in America is sexually abused. One fifth out of every boy. What we're looking at is a tremendous world background, especially in the West, and it's spreading all over the world, where people are just being so bombarded by genitality, where probably every major product is being sold in a way to try to entice someone to consider that this has some connection with sexuality in some way. Now, because of this, people's thinking gets so affected. Statistics show that the average American man, about every 29 or 30 minutes, is thinking about sex. And so people are just having neurosis and psychosis, just so much absorbed in sexual mentality. If we analyze so much restlessness of devotees, you'll find the majority of cases it comes down to something in connection with sexuality. If you find why majority of people leave, if we have to ask Prabhupada's servants, why did you really leave Prabhupada's service? Same way we have to ask Kala Krishna Das, why did you leave Lord Chaitanya's service? He was enticed by the Badaharis, how they presented, you can become a king, nice girls, attracting nice boys. So they allured him. That you can live kingly and have sensual pleasures. And he left. Lord Chaitanya says. They gave him basically the enticement of gross and subtle sex life. You can become important. You can enjoy as a king, which means that you can enjoy your as you things you lord over. They can be your possessions, etc. So because it's such a serious issue, as it causes so much disturbance, it is important that it is understood in a deeper level. Because it very much is in accord with what we're just now reading. That it's not a matter of avoiding attachments, it's a matter of healthy attachments. It's not a matter of avoiding attractions, it's a matter of proper attractions. It's not an accident that we have this whole line. I mean, there are people who are considered, you know, to be the Buddha incarnated, people who are the most amazing yogis, most amazing spiritual shastras and gurus, and one after another falling down. You go to one tradition after another. What are you talking about? Buddhism, Tantric Buddhism, you're talking about Shankaracharya's line, you're talking about Vaishnava's line. I mean, you're talking about Christianity, you're talking about Sufis, and you'll find a similar thing happen. Why? Well, one we see in modern times is being so much thrusted upon us that one is always having to think in these ways. It's such a mental culture. But Bhakti Siddhanta explains who was a lifetime celibate. He explains that sexuality cannot be avoided any more than life itself, as it is integral to the identity of the soul with the lifetime celibate. What is he telling us? What message is there that's coming across? There is absolutely nothing wrong with sexuality. Just as people are having such trouble trying to make vows to be celibate, people are having just as much trouble trying to be accountable in relationship to have one partner. That especially in Kali Yuga is that people don't want to be accountable, consistently accountable. That mentality is generally there. I mean, in my experience, in this lifetime of about 30 years now as a celibate, you get interesting realizations. You say, most of my life, I've been in an ashram. And as we look at our scriptures, at ourselves, at our communities, past, present, and perhaps future, we see it's a very important issue to understand better. When someone tries to deny sexuality, they're just as much of a failure as what is happening now in present-day society, where there is a movement that promiscuity is okay, that for health, for enjoyment, for socialization, promiscuity is okay. Just be a mature adult, honor whatever you feel, and exist that way. Whether it's homosexuality, heterosexuality, it is okay. So that kind of extreme is just as unhealthy as people who feel that sex is dirty, nasty, improper, etc. Both type of mentalities are causing a big problem in the world and amongst spiritualists. So Bhaktisiddhanta is saying that it is essential, it is an integral part of the soul, it is a part of life, it is something that is not to be shunned in the sense that it is some kind of taboo. This is Vrishnu Haridasa explaining that he is not saying stop attachments, but proper attachments, proper attractions, proper associations. People are killing themselves as they are repressing sexuality and sexual energies, and then they're getting neurosis, psychosis, anxieties, fears, bad relationships, etc. Just as much as people are killing themselves as they're just thinking through the genitals. So everything becomes focused on such. And so there is promiscuity, pornography, there is incest, and all kinds of things because of also. And excessive meditation and acceptance, and excessive meditation and avoidance. Try to stay with me as we talk on this subject matter, because you can help yourself and help many other people as you understand this a little better. So often, people in the monastic ashram or in the grihastha ashram is so much thinking that sex is something bad, dirty, etc. And therefore, they have unhealthy mentality out of relationship or in relationship. And it also increases some of the divorces that are happening in our society. It also increases the excessive bhogatyaga, where people are impersonal and then they go to the other side. What happens so much when often devotees divorce? So many times they divorce and they start looking for a partner who they can be more loose with. Because of trying to engage in Krishna consciousness in an unhealthy way, then they go to the other extreme, and so many times we find devotees, nice devotee, leaves his wife, leaves his husband, and go, and he has a karmi relationship, karmi husband, karmi girlfriend, boyfriend, karmi wife. Because of so much, sometimes unhealthy repression, and then it goes to the opposite. So, being celibate, it should not be a matter of avoidance, or shouldn't be a matter of being alone or being lonely. If you have to ask many sannyasis, why did you leave the ashram? Why 45, 50 or so years old, and someone is thinking now about having a husband, I'm sorry, having a wife, and also a woman. Women were white for 15, 10 years, and when they reached their late 40s, 50s, and now they're thinking that I made a mistake, I should have got a husband. Or they're in anxiety and disturbed, hating the society, because they're thinking, you know, I shouldn't have a husband. And it's in many cases. In some cases, they should have had a husband. In other cases, they should have understood better about proper channeling energies. Is that relationship, affection, association, create sex is creativity. Is part of the creative aspect of life. That cannot be stopped. It is part of the essential aspect of relationship. That is not to be stopped. We may put aside and stop genitality, but not sexuality. Even in our original sarup, we see there is the gopa and there is the gopi. There is the feminine and there is the masculine aspect. And we're all part and parcel of the divine feminine masculine aspect, as we have mame vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta shanatana, that we are intricately a part of eternal romance, intricately a part of eternal association, intricately a part of eternal union. That everything in one way or the other is connecting with something else. Union is everything. Everything is about to come in connection. But the point is, to what degree are we I and mine, as Hari Das is saying. It's not that celibacy is greater or more spiritual than a grihastha relationship. No. It's not that one is more better than the other. That is nonsense. It's a matter that the idea of celibacy is to enhance the ability to have less focus on possessiveness. And so if it's honored properly, it can allow that. If it's honored properly, it will give one more facility to not to try to see others as objects of enjoyment. Or will allow one not to, so they have to own the experience. They have to experience someone in order to be able to relate to them and honor their existence. It can help the way, help the person to focus more with humility and submissiveness. Supposedly to do that, as one is less being attached to things, as one is able now to hopefully develop more from the genuine heart connection, which means ultimately minimizing the body and physicality. It doesn't necessarily happen in celibacy. There's celibacy without love, without proper attachment, then it produces hard heart, and one becomes angry and disturbed and restless and all kinds of energies of anxiety. And what it really means, the person is denying their sexuality. They're denying healthy relationship. And in all spiritual societies where there is a celibate factor, this is going on. And people are suffering. I mean, I was shocked to see so much anxiety and lust in the communities of nuns. I got a chance to see what a woman feels like when men are just lusting over her. Some of those intense experiences is going into Spain, Italy, different places, going into nunneries, trying to self-help us books, and to be there and dealing with nuns. And especially if it's a two-to-two or one-to-one type of relationship. And you realize, because some of them are not, just as men, just as monks, just as sannyasis, are not properly channeling energies. It's repression. And therefore the intense lust just shoots out into the environment and makes you feel like running out of the room. You see, they can't control their body movements, their eyes, because the lust is just so strong. And because they're not considering that the body and the eyes is just the body and the eyes. It does different things and let it do and let it go. Because of repression, an anxiety about what's happening, then it brings more of an attachment rather than a releasing and an honoring, and let it go. It's natural that there's a certain chemistry that goes on when men and women are together. Somebody has homosexual tendencies from the other person. When you come in, other same sex is there. There's some chemistry that goes on. It's just a body. The body is a machine. But as we try to repress it, then it can produce artificialness. Or we just try to honor it unhealthily, then it's also a problem. So the idea of celibacy should be the same as in relationship. It should be how to see what is best in Krishna's service, reject things that are not favorable. It should be how to find ways to honor Krishna better. So if Krishna is not in the center in a celibate type of relationship, it's not different than Krishna not being in the center in a grihamedi relationship. And so this energy of karma, which ends in so much meditation or just the genitality, is actually the same energy of prema, is just converted. It just has to be transformed. So when somebody is trying to deny, then how are they going to reach prema if they're trying to deny what has to be transformed that becomes prema? If ultimate affection, association, relationship, and union with God is prema, and we're trying to deny it, then how does the karma turn into prema? We're trying to deny it. We'll not be able to transform. And so we are not people who are saying that sex is something dirty or bad. Or are we saying that one should be promiscuous, or one should not have restriction, one should not have proper control? There must be control. There must be regulation. But regulation, whether one is celibate and regulating, channeling the energies in a healthy way and becoming less and less possessive, or whether one is in relationship and also being regulated based on desire for procreation, based on the desire for proper association with keeping Krishna in the center. And so we have many marriages breaking up, many people leaving the shelter of devotional service, finding all kind of reasons, and the real reason, they just wanted to enjoy their senses. Or the real reason is that they were not experiencing mucci, they were not experiencing pleasure, because they were not understanding that we must now bring this attraction on to Krishna. And so you'll see, where someone's energies are balanced, they've taken the deity as their child, taking the deity as their husband, they've taken the mission as their family, they've taken the community as their family. In other words, relationship has to be there. It cannot be that we're just going to go through all these ritualistic activities and chant, and somehow we're going to control our mind, control our senses, and especially in Western bodies where we've been so much brought up from day one, been brought up in a culture that's just permeating with promiscuousness, illicit activities. And in most cases, we're even products out of lust. The whole existence, the whole body we have, is a product out of lust. And in many cases, was an accident out of lust. So for one, just to try to stop overnight such things, the energy must be channeled, and then it'll be healthy. So, we bring this up because this tenth offense, stressing about maintaining material attachment even after doing the other things, there's a lot of emphasis to, as we do avoid those 10 or 9 offenses, now we must look at what is to be done and how it is to be done. And so the avoidance is only the background. The most important thing is what we do, not what we don't do. Big thing, what you don't do. That's why most of the sannyasis fall down. Because in don't do, but the thing is, what do you do? So that makes a difference. And that's why you find even, yogis who have gained heavy impersonalization, even, entering to prema platform on the bhava platform, falling down due to this factor. due to the element of sexuality. They don't fall down so much due to attachment of money, properties, assets, all these kind of things, fame, these things. Not as much. So we see that when, like in the case of Sobari Muni, because of offense, then that strength that he had to refrain from such was lost. So we see the offenses can also weaken the immune system, where then it becomes even a greater problem. Without understanding it, more and more, then it maintains itself, such as the problem. And even though we understand it, we still will feel agitation and disturbance. That's okay. So we do with that agitation and disturbance. It's only a dead body doesn't feel some type of stimulation. The organism is alive, it's going to feel some repulsion, some attraction. It's natural. The question is, you know, what do we do? See, even in Vedic times, like in the case of the renounced ashram, there was so much focus on pranayamas, so much emphasis on ways of dealing with the energies in the body, the life force, and the senses, so that there was more physical control. This is all along with the rituals and the meditation. But in Kali Yuga, the bodies are not so prone to be able to do such things. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons Prabhupada didn't put so much emphasis on it. When you look in the idea of celibacy, there was so much regulation, distinct in terms of diet, and so much regulation in terms of certain types of exercises that would then give the body much more ability to refrain from some of the bombardments. But this is probably give us 16 rounds, we have trouble even doing that. What if people are taught in many, many ashrams with an emphasis on celibacy, at least in Vedic culture? Integral part is a practice every day, regimentated, different types of asanas, so that the body being a machine doesn't get so drawn in, doesn't get so attracted, is able to deal with so many things. But still, even places where that is practiced, even where some were masters of asanas, masters of yoga, you fall out. Yeah. And there are, you know, several modern cases of that. We don't want to be calling people's names, but there are so many famous gurus who are doing such in different orders, and they fall down with their secretaries, or even sometimes with the children of their own disciples who they're teaching the asanas and yoga to, and they fall down with, you know, with the children. Like half a dozen cases of that. Swami Satchananda, there are several others who are powerful yogis, powerful teachers in their own ways, even with certain levels of realization, and then later the revelations come out in certain ways. So, not a matter of avoidance, as if that will just eradicate the issue, or promiscuous involvement. But to the degree that we do this sarupa lakshana, fully dependent upon Krishna, then we're in that mood, I'm dependent upon Krishna, I'm celibate, dependent upon Krishna, I have wife, I have children, I have relationship, dependent upon Krishna. I must do things as Krishna has asked. And my body and my existence is for Krishna. And then in that way, as the Bhagavad Gita says, then sexuality done under religious principles, that is also a way to worship Krishna. And so one is concerned, how can I serve and worship Krishna? So there's not something glorious about being in a grihastha ashram, any more glorious than being in a celibate ashram. It's not that one is better than the other. The question is, to what degree are we having that full dependence on Krishna? And where things interfere with that, and naturally in the grihastha ashram, there can be more challenges because you have more material things you have to deal with in order to maintain the ashram. So in that sense, it becomes more challenging, more risky, etc. But the important issue is the issue of consciousness. And so here we conclude then with the ten offenses, that we can avoid the others, or avoid all of the namaparas. But unless there is giving up this attachment of I and mine, this possessiveness, and that possessiveness is particularly amplified in genitality, where one is thinking, I am Lord of Vaisuve, and I am to experience, and I am to enjoy unrestrictedly, etc. So the more that is there, the more it increases bodily consciousness. And where it is channeled with real selflessness and real compassion and ability to honor others' existence, then there will not be so much of this underlying agitation that will cause all kinds of restlessness, which really means that one is just sexually agitated. And so this is why we're discussing this today. It's such an issue, especially in modern day times. It has been in Kali Yuga, but especially in modern day times. It can often determine, you know, success or failure as one is trying to go deeper in their spiritual life. So let's stop there and see what questions you have. So our last discussion tomorrow, the chapter, chapter 15, the bhajans of confidential worship. Since we've looked at all the 10 offenses, and the last one of maintaining material attachment, and then some discussions on seva aparad, we didn't go much into that because we all know this from the nectar of devotion. It should be pretty much forward in our minds. But we kind of touched upon some topics that we can try to take advantage of, you know, during this Kartik time. Any questions, any comments?
As we know that in Kali Yuga, these kind of things which you were talking about, sexuality, desires, are bound to happen because it's written Bhagavatam, it has been said everywhere.
Yeah.
And people, you can see, are falling in that trap. People are victim of that, whether it's, I don't know, is the Kali Yuga doing it or whatever it is, the environment doing it, but they are suffering. As the way I understand is that the individual soul is Sachidanand, it never wants to go into those kind of things, but it still is a victim, is a part of it, is doing it, is suffering. So how do you expect people to get out of this kind of karmic cycle of suffering? And though the principles what we're talking about, that the sexuality if God made it for reproduction of the world and not for the enjoyment or whatever it is, but how do you expect them to come out of this? I mean, what do you think they should be doing that these kind of environmental things which are so heavy on them, everywhere, every step, every place you go, you see that they're trapped into it, and no matter what they try, they still get the victim of it.
Yes, we see that it's impossible to avoid it. There's no doubt about that. In some places, it's even extremely, very extreme. In parts of Europe and South Africa, the bulletin boards now is total pornography. I mean, like you wouldn't believe. And it's becoming, you know, almost like that in America also. More and more, even, you know, cartoons practically. So we know it cannot be avoided. And just as, you know, when Bhadisananda was saying sexuality cannot be avoided, he wasn't speaking in terms of pornography, but the idea of people trying to put it out of their consciousness and thinking that it's something dirty, something bad, that is an integral part of existence. It's a matter of how it's centered, what the focus is. So what do we do then? First, you realize that we have to find more projects, more activities that we can do, where there is enjoyment, excitement, the energies can go into, where the mind is less distracted and go into the lower passions. Other thing that we have to be more focused on is that ruchi, taste, and enjoyment is there. And so even when it comes to the idea of grihasthis carrying out their prescribed duties, whatever they do, they can do it with enjoyment for Krishna. As we are following proper regulations, then everything becomes a part of enjoyment in Krishna's service. I mean, it's a very controversial topic, and things can be taken out of context. But I was hearing one seminar that was given by, very senior woman devotee in our society who was married, and she was telling the mothers that you're not supposed to enjoy sex life. And immediately I felt sad, because I realized there was some very serious spiritual and psychological and physical confusion. And that there was, again, this kind of extreme consideration that sex itself is dirty and it's bad and it's this and it's that. And the Manu Smith and other chakras explain, you know, very interesting things in relationship to how we're more likely to produce a male child, a female child. And Prabhupada explained in the Bhagavatam that where one who is more sexually stimulated, there is going to be, woman is more stimulated, more likely, there's going to be a male child, a female child. When the sex energy of the man is stronger, more likely, or it seems stronger, more likely a male child. So it talks about all these kind of things. Therefore, it is talking about stimulation, it's talking about, you know, emotions and things. But then we realize that there is some guilt, and there is some you know, dysfunctional kind of, you know, mindset, that this is something that's dirty. And the idea is that it must be Krishna-centered. And this is one of the most senior women in our movement, in terms of how long she's been, in terms of service. And I was like shocked, because she's, you know, the wife of one of the gurus. And I realized that there's a big issue, that she's teaching this to mothers in the movement. And therefore, another way that it dehumanizes and disempowers women. Another way that it causes women to feel an unhealthy way, and not being able to support the husbands. It should be a nice relationship, where Krishna is centered, there's teamship, and there's support, etc. But these issues are there, and, you know, as I travel, maybe later I'm going to... It's difficult as a sannyasi, you know, but I'm a psychotherapist also, a psychologist, and I'm very community-minded and sensitive to some of these things. And so I may be more prone to talk about them than most. But actually, most people don't talk about it. Even priests, they do not talk much amongst themselves about celibacy. They just struggle and suffer. They don't talk about it. And you'll find that even most householders in most places, they will not talk about these issues. And most sannyasis, you know, we kind of don't, I guess, don't talk about it also, in some cases. I don't know what other people do, but... And so it leaves an ambiguity in such. Or when it's approached, and it's approached in an unhealthy way, or then people get into the New Age thing, like what's happening now, like what Hare Krishna created. You know, he went to the other extreme. And now he's attacking Srila Prabhupada and saying that this is unhealthy, so many things like that. And so many hundreds of thousands of people who are connected with him, different ways to become influenced. Because, you know, it hasn't been talked about, I think, in some ways that it should be, so that there is clarity. But it's clear in the scriptures, when we constantly hear and Prabhupada speak, that we're not to be necessarily avoiding or repressing, but we are to honor Krishna's existence and offer things to Krishna. And so we must look and see, will Krishna accept this offering? If we can be offered to Krishna, then we can offer. And we accept things favorable, we reject things that are not favorable. In that sense. See, this is why also the Muslims are the number one group of people in the world who patronize prostitutes and pornography, where there is really, really strict Muslim, what do you call it, the Islamic law, where, you know, the governments are not governed just by regular political law, but by this, what's it called, Sharia, what's that political? We must know. The American, the Muslim laws, when the country is governed, you know, by the Quran. No, Syria or something. A few countries, you know, Saudi Arabia, a few other countries where, and some countries where there is Muslims, that there are different parts, like in parts of Nigeria where they're trying now to honor, you know, the Sharia law, which means that you're governed just by Islamic principles and not by regular civic law. Now, these places where there's more heavier religious fundamentalism, or places where women are wearing the hoods and covering their eyes and all of this, Those men are often worse. When they leave those countries, they just go wild for prostitution. I mean, this is statistically proven. They just go wild. Because sometimes too much artificial separation.
Repress. Shoots out of them, and they are totally uncontrolled.
They're totally uncontrolled.
Very true. Very true.
Because it's such excessive separation and avoidance. And then when there is seemingly a different situation. Because in those countries, what do you call it, illicit affairs can be death. So because of that, it puts so much into people's minds in an unhealthy way. And then when they're out of those countries, they just go wild. And they patronize pornography and prostitutes more than any one group of people. Other questions? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gurudev, I was just on a humorous note when just thinking how we need kirtan. But isn't it the responsibility of each devotee to have a confidential associate in order to express the progression of assimilating and letting go of lust or unresolved lust issues? And I'm finding in our society that's something that's lacking for myself in a woman's body. Just finding someone to totally understand.
Well, Rupa Goswami explains in the process of priti that devotees are supposed to reveal their minds. But it's not that just having a partner or somebody you can share these things with, you know, is going to make it go or be able to help you to channel it in a better way. But it's a matter of having healthy relationships where you are able to, you know, to be genuine, to be creative, to be loving, to be compassionate, to be selfless. Having more of those will naturally help a person to, you know, to be able to balance their sexual energies. It's like with any situation, the more that you can be able to communicate healthily, the more that you can honor each other's existence, the more that you can value someone else, then there's less focus on your own body and its pleasures and also its demands. Just give you an example. Again, statistics in America suggest that 90% of people's thinking in America is about themselves. Only 10% is about somebody else. So when you have that kind of environment, lack of community, lack of selflessness, lack of compassion, everything then becomes my pleasures, my needs, my fulfillments, which ends in gross and subtle, you know, it's sex connections. Yes.
Gurudev, I want to thank you for talking about this subject matter because it's just so important. I really appreciate that you're addressing this delicate topic. Over the last few days, I've just been reviewing some of the child abuse cases in our movement. And it's really sad as I read case to case to case to see that so much of what happened was due to this kind of repression that people experienced as they were trying to do different kinds of services or even in their association with different people. And even parents abusing their own child was due to repressed sexuality that was there with their wife or husband or whatever. And it is kind of sad, so I'm really happy you're talking about this. But I guess it appears to me that this kind of repression reinforces also this lack of accountability and responsibility. We see that our young people, especially our young men, they tend to use this, social philosophical understanding that one should try to remain celibate, one should be a brahmachari, one should, you know, all the things that supposedly make one spiritually advanced. And then as a in using that, they tend to shy away from the responsibility of accepting a wife or being accountable with a wife and doing things in a way that's pleasing. And then they do all kinds of different perverted things, and so many things happen. So I was wondering, because you are an isolated person that speak about these issues, that one, as our spiritual master, two, as a GVC, what are we going to do in our society to address some of the young people that have this conception that's really destroying so much of how they behave with each other?
Well, it's one of the reasons I wrote the Spiritual Warrior 2 book, which is most popular book, and outside of Prabhupada's books, it's the most popular book in this kind right now. And there's a reason for that, because people are trying to deal with these issues. We're out again. We're totally out. We have to reprint again. We just signed thousands and thousands. And of the books being translated in 7 languages, that one was the first one that each country practically has translated. We're just talking a little bit about relationship and love between man and woman and these sort of issues. But from a spiritual perspective, these things are to be addressed. And the proof of it is, again, of what the results have been. I mean, the abuse of children and the battering and abuse of women in our movement, has been, really most unfortunate. Some of it has to do, or you take the other extreme, the abuse, leaders' abuse of power. Sometimes even leaders being so abusive with power is also just perverted to sex energy. It's like sex energy or sex, frustration. It then puts a person in a position where they just feel like they have to control everybody around them in an unhealthy way. And it's very dangerous. Yeah, you see the side of it. I mean, those who have to deal with these child abuse cases, and you realize that it's a hell of a lot. I think the figure was something like over 200 cases being investigated. It's so many. Unbelievable. Not that all of those are, are genuine cases of abuse, but something like over 200 cases, going on the files of being, being investigated of child abuse, of sex abuse, in a movement that is supposed to be so much based on controlling the senses, a movement that has such an emphasis, on celibacy and whatnot, and regulation and marriage. And you see all of this, and you realize this is symptomatic of something that's a little more intense. Yes. And keep in mind too, our divorce rate is higher than the karmas. No question of that. It is higher. And so then we look, well, theirs is really high and ours is even higher. What is this? In a philosophy that says no divorce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna. I was just thinking about my own experience being in the Vaishnava girls' school, and observing the girls there, and also we had a chance to watch the Mahabharata series tapes, and I was observing the different etiquettes that are like really ingrained and how they dealt with each other, and then also we had a teacher, Prabhupada disciple, who's really interested in the Mahabharata, explain to us that one of the reasons why Kali Yuga came more quickly or something is because Draupadi was insulted, or a woman was insulted. So I was just thinking, and I've heard discussion about it, that it is important to understand the value of a woman, or understand that for both men and women should understand what is the meaning to, you know, why women and children should be protected, and, you know, like the psychological makeup of both. So that, you know, I'm particularly thinking that it would be important for, you know, like Gurukul, but also like Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis, whatever.
Yes, we see one of the most prominent attributes of leadership is that a leader should be able to protect those who are under one's care. One of the most essential things. Sabha Sakina Bhavan, to one, those people should feel happy, they should feel protected in such ways. And we see one of the major duties of a king was that he's supposed to be able to arrange protection so people could go on, you know, in a healthy way. And the Bhagavatam, you know, shouts at us when women, children, elders, Brahmins, cows are being abused, that one's lifespan will be short, civilization will experience, you know, difficulties. And I, you know, share with you what I was once sharing with some of the leaders. And I was talking with Shruti Kirti about this before he left also. So isn't it so amazing that in our society we have so many powerful, intelligent leaders, you know, on our GBC board. But so many times we come together and we make resolutions that are, you know, not so wonderful. And I said, I'm convinced, after years and years of being on the board, that it's due to it. There's a certain, like, cloud that we have to deal with. And that cloud is fallout from not protecting women, children, elders, and brothers. And that as we make sometimes decisions, we're having to work through that cloud. And that cloud is hard, sometimes to penetrate. Because why is it there? So many intelligent men individually, but then collectively we all come together. Sometimes our decisions are not always so healthy. The Prabhupada factor is there, and gradually, you know, things happen sometimes in spite of us. But why is it? And it happens too often. And I think it has to do with the fact of what leadership's duty is that when there's too much lack of protection, then there is karmic fallout. And the proof of it is, you know, these, you know, 200 cases that we're investigating. And a lot of those cases are for people, you know, in rather prominent positions, you know, we're teaching them. People who had exposure to the children and have abused some of the children. Because of that, then, you know, we're all comically, you know, the movement is comically having to struggle based on such. Then you look at it from another level and you realize a lot of it has to do with sex energy that wasn't properly understood, it wasn't properly channeled, and therefore that energy now is being transferred onto a child. And this is happening in the secular world like anything. Because everything is so much based on genitality, and so now it becomes more prone for a father or mother to become sexually attracted to their child. Any last questions or comments? Yes.
Just now about one devotee that was, I guess, preaching or sharing about sex is not to be enjoyed, you know, stuff like that. And I've heard it from, you know, from many people who were born in ISKCON and they've had that conception. How can we, like, help to deprogram that mentality?
Well, just like we take prasadam or we clean the temple, that we should enjoy cleaning the temple for Krishna. Because we're offering this as a service to Krishna. We should be happy that we can wash the pots for Krishna. So similarly, if we do things in the spirit that we're doing this for Krishna, in the way that Krishna would be pleased, then what is the question? You know, we're not bringing our mind and emotions and intelligence into a situation. We should think intelligently, how I can wash the pots very nicely. This is the whole idea of samskara. And so samskara was that people would prepare themselves before they enter into sex life, with the idea of more focus on devotion, more attention and appreciation of honoring each other as servants of God, of Krishna. I mean, all these things are there, but somehow we kind of miss them. I mean, just what is, you know, what's the whole thing of samskara? Even in Vedic times, people announcing, you know, getting the blessings from the guru, from the brahmanas, from the sages. You know, before even the idea of procreation. getting the blessings from the spiritual master, that they would like, you know, maybe to have a child. They have a child. So what is that? If it's something like dirty and nasty, and just something that's supposed to be, you know, totally avoided, then why are all these samskaras there in such ways? You know? But the fact that people are thinking and sharing and preaching that to others can create a tremendous dysfunctional mood of the extreme, of going to one extreme and the other extreme. It's very dangerous. Be lesson. Now, I don't understand all of these things, you know. I'm just trying to share something. No, am I above all of this, you know. But we're talking about it as a family. Yes.
This because it's
something,
so
something will cut my throat and give this tape.
Well, you'll be protected.
That's why I'm hiding here and getting angry. Yes, ma'am.
Because it's needed. This sort of subject matter needs to be aired. Because just like you were bringing up before, so much has been I'd like to just look at, just taking into consideration that this is a process of self-realization. And so often we hear, we only consider the self as selfish.
Mm-hmm.
When actually there are so many aspects of the self that need to be understood and explored and appreciated. Because when we think about just when each of us come in contact with the process of Krishna consciousness, it's we who surrender that self to the process. We're in contact with it. We're connected with the self. But often it seems as if the external expectations bring about a disconnection with that self, because there's a pleasure that's there in that surrender. And it's a satisfaction that's there in that surrender. But when the expectations come externally and are superimposed on the self, it seems to form this block that also causes so much repression and difficulty and obscures the actual process. So it seems that just by allowing the opportunity to discuss these things is so valuable, because simply because the process is sacred and it's for self-realization. It's the most valuable thing we have for ourselves and to offer to anyone on the entire planet. And I think that's one thing, that overemphasis of selfishness. Perhaps we can look at it from a different angle and accept that that there's more to the self than only that limitation.
It's very nice to explain it. Selfishness, self, you know, the sacredness. And this is why we have this principle, you know, of Niyamagraha, that we have to be careful that we don't minimize rules and regulations. At the same time, we don't make devotional service just rules and regulations. And then we forget what the essence is that we're trying to connect with. And what happens is that in time, we start having literally more rules, trying to organize the society based on laws and rules that we have to impose, because we're not bringing out the natural sweetness and natural growth, in some cases, of the individual devotee. So because of that, then we have to impose external rules to get people to do what should be more naturally internally, or should be more, you know, more spontaneous. It's like, for instance, take example of a king or a leader. That leader somehow can't show the people under their control that certain way to live is best for them. Then they have to more and more put heavy rules, And so people would then agree to follow those rules somewhat, as long as they feel that they may be chastised. But it doesn't bring out the best of the person when you have to impose so many external rules. So some people are getting a little discouraged, and they're noticing more and more now, at the end of the GBC meetings, there's just rules and rules and rules. If you look at the last 5-10 years, you see that there's more and more rules. Everything becomes more and more rules. And it becomes a little frightening because you realize, why is there a need for so many rules? Then we have to try to focus a little bit more, getting people to understand some things so that they just naturally do what's necessary. We have to have more sort of guidelines, moving toward an essence. There has to be so many rules, rules, rules. Then people begin to kind of forget the idea of healthy relationship. It becomes more running away from some chastisement due to a rule, or avoiding some type of situation that may cause a person to be penalized. And so you can have a society even function like this. Like a child, you can get the child to do the right things because they'll be chastised. But better to get them to understand that you do right because this is the way that we express our love and our affection. This is the way that mommy and daddy will be pleased. This is the way that you'll be a better person. And so the kid is not just doing something because, you know he's going to get a whooping if he doesn't do the right thing. So when there's a need of too much rules, it's a sign of a lack of really touching people's psyche in a healthy way. And therefore you have to have the rules so that you can force or impose upon people to do a certain thing. The rules are necessary, but when there's so many, then it's a sign of an unhealthy civilization, of an unhealthy environment. Certain rules should be there to give guidelines, and certain things should be there if there's disobeying the rules. You don't honor the lawlessness, and you can't help to create law. But when there have to be so many, many rules, then there's a sign that the situation is a little out of control, and now the idea is imposing. So it's happening, you know, with the government right now. Because of the terrorist issue, then there's now more and more stipulations and deprivations, you know, where now the law can come in more ways than before. And they can take away certain, you know, civic rights and civic property, etc. So that's a sign that things are sort of out of control.
Again, I'd also like to thank you so much for making this open. Just in response to the rules idea, one of the lines that's given me a lot of shelter over the years from Prabhupada's books is in one Bhagavad Gita purport where he says, in the beginning of devotional service, one may not be able to fully discharge all the rules. But if one is not resentful of the principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat or hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the goal eventually. So that not pushing the rule aside, but just admitting honestly, I may not be able to fully follow it now, find that gives a lot of shelter. And on the other point, two things. One is that just in traveling to sometimes different devotional communities, I always feel so fortunate to have my home at Gita Nagari because somehow or another, you know, can analyze all the different factors. But I think, although we're all faulty and we all need to improve, there's a very healthy general atmosphere of love and affection among the devotees. And a lot of, maybe there's a lot of older ladies and younger men, so there's a lot of motherly feelings. And also in my observance of Indian communities, when there's healthy sexuality, I see that there's so much affection freely shown between mother and son. Mm-hmm. Even on the Mahabharata page, you see Krishna up till 12 years old or something, the mothers are just smothering him with affection. So when affection is able to be expressed within proper behavior, that seems to make a nice balance.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the earlier years we were trying, but we kind of missed that sometimes with our children. That's why some of our kids also have an issue with the society, is that at very critical periods in their life when they needed that kind of affection, that it wasn't so much there. They were just put in the ashram and then told, you know, not to, to see their children, not to visit them very much. Or sometimes they were, so the kids were told, you know, that your mother is Maya. So then the child goes home and the child is, you know, living as a little brahmachari in the ashram, and then he goes home and the mother is trying to feed him this and take care of him and find out how he's doing. He's just thinking that, you know, Mataji is Maya. Yeah, it's very dangerous. Okay. Any lesson? Anyway, the idea is that as we do read closer and talk about such things, we can all try to activate these principles in our lives a lot more. And they're being given to us very clearly. Accept what is favorable, reject things that are unfavorable. And Hari Das is explaining that when we're thinking I and mine, then there's a problem. But he's not saying that we're not to have relationship, attraction, associations. We're not to try to excel in areas. But when there is too much of the hamamiti, the possessive mentality that's based on one's own individual satisfaction, pleasures, bodily demands and concerns, then Krishna is being put farther in the background. But as we put Krishna farther in the center, then this is Bhaktivinoda, or the case of, you know, Ramanujacharya, even favors, you know, one of his household couples, you know, even over the sannyasis. Because as he put them through a test, it was shown that they were actually much more renounced. They were much more dedicated, and that Krishna was in the center. So we're not really into, you know, renunciation or unhealthy attachments. We're not into avoidance. But we're looking at how we can have more of a mood of simplicity, how we can be able to, based on our own situation, be more directly all for Krishna. And a person is to make the decision. So for most, by being in Grihastha Ashram is necessary. And the idea is now, see how to be all for Krishna. In that sense. ISKCON Founder Charter Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sarabhagavati.